It's April 18th. I'm Brian Dean Wright, former CIA operations officer, and this is The Wright Report. Hey, good day to you, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The Wright Report, your daily news podcast. I've got four briefs for you this morning that are shaping America and the world. First up, the U.S. Senate squashed an effort yesterday to remove a Biden official from his role in overseeing the southern border. We'll talk about how that might impact the handling of 10 million illegals who are likely on the way. Second, the White House slapped some sanctions on the country of Venezuela yesterday, except there is a big loophole the size of an oil tanker. I'll share why that is not a coincidence. Third, the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, announced that he would move forward with a $61 billion bill for Ukraine. That is a controversial move, and I will remind us as to why. Fourth, the White House is launching into a new war this morning. It's a tariff war, and it is between the U.S., Russia, and China. We'll discuss why we should care. But before we get to all of that, let's get to our top story of the morning. The U.S. Senate put to an end yesterday the impeachment of Joe Biden's Homeland Security Secretary, Mr. Alejandro Mayorkas. The Democrat-controlled Senate voted 51-49 along partisan lines to dismiss the impeachment articles against Mr. Mayorkas, which were passed just weeks ago by the U.S. House. Now, the allegation was that Mr. Mayorkas willfully failed to uphold U.S. immigration laws, which in turn allowed in a record 7 million-plus illegal aliens. And by doing that, he breached the trust of his office with the American people. Democrat senators, however, said that the charges did not rise to the constitutional standards of high crimes and misdemeanors. So they dismissed the entire set of allegations without ever discussing the evidence, nor without a trial. But while this does represent the end of the impeachment and removal process for Mr. Mayorkas, it does not end the argument about the flood of illegal aliens that are still coming into this country. In fact, that challenge for Mr. Biden and Mr. Mayorkas is going to get even worse. Here's why. A survey earlier this week from a pollster in Venezuela showed that 40% of the people there will leave the country if their Marxist dictator, Mr. President Maduro, wins re-election in July. And that is likely to happen, which would mean that upwards of 10 million people are going to try to flee Venezuela, with many of them trying to come here. And so, Mr. Mayorkas and Mr. Biden will have to decide what to do. And based on their records so far, they will almost certainly try to welcome some of them. As listeners will recall, the White House has granted special status to Venezuelans such that they can actually fly directly to the U.S. using something called humanitarian parole. Now, others from Venezuela make the trip by foot. In fact, last October, we saw that about 50,000 Venezuelans crossed over in that 1 month alone. So if I could pivot briefly from facts and data to analysis and opinion, the point is this: if we have a crisis in Venezuela this July with upwards of 10 million people looking to leave, we should not expect Mr. Mayorkas to do anything different than he has already done. And that is because the U.S. Senate just wiped away any concerns about his leadership or that of Mr. Biden, given the last batch of a million plus Venezuelans that we've already had. And so, with that, let's move on to our second and related brief of the morning. The Biden administration said yesterday that they would reinstate some sanctions on Venezuela's oil industry. That decision was in reaction to the country's continued refusal to allow for free and fair elections. But as the Wall Street Journal and others are reporting this morning, Mr. Biden and his team are being a little bit sneaky with this sanctions announcement. That is because they plan to allow for some waivers for oil and gas companies to get around the new sanctions. And they're doing that because the White House fears both a flood of 10 million illegals that we just talked about, plus higher gas prices. And if those two things were to occur, that could affect Mr. Biden's re-election effort. Now, to understand this news and to unpack it, let's do a quick refresh about what we know about Venezuela and why we should care. So let's go back in time to the 1980s. Now, during that decade and those before, Venezuela was one of the richest nations in all of South America. But along with their economic success was a notable amount of corruption amongst the ruling elite. And that is why back in 1992, there was a military coup led or participated by with a man named Hugo Chavez. and he was arrested by the government, but then he was pardoned. And that turned out to be a very bad decision. Mr. Chavez went on to win the presidency of Venezuela in 1998, using his celebrity from that 1992 coup, and he then rewrote the Constitution, turning that nation into a Marxist dictatorship. By the year 2013, he had not only turned the country into a Marxist dictatorship, he had also turned it into an absolute economic disaster. And as his country was collapsing around him, Mr. Chavez died of cancer. Immediately after, his vice president, a guy named Nicolas Maduro, took his place as, well, effectively the dictator. And it is he who has continued to run the country ever since. But to be clear, the people there have very little choice in the matter. He has rigged the elections or canceled them outright. He's also arrested his political opponents. And he's also pulled Venezuela further from the traditional allies they have enjoyed in places like Europe and the United States to those like the Russians, the Chinese, and the Cubans. And that's been problematic, concerning, for a few reasons, but most especially because of oil. Venezuela has the world's largest proven reserves of oil, and much of it, at least historically, was sent to places like Texas and Louisiana to refine. It's also been sent to other countries far away, like India, too. But nevertheless, the point is that with Marxism in full swing in Venezuela, the U.S. government over the past 10 years or so, certainly under Donald Trump, slapped some notable sanctions on their oil and gas industry to try to push for change. But last fall, the Biden White House tried a different approach. They offered the Maduro regime to let up on sanctions for 6 months if Mr. Maduro allowed more of his political opposition to organize and for one of them to run for the presidency. And that includes a woman named Maria Corina Machado. And if he allowed for her to run, that would actually be a pretty big deal, because polls show that if Venezuela were to have free and fair elections, she would win. Now, curiously, last fall, Mr. Maduro agreed to have free and fair elections. But that left some critics to be, well, pretty suspicious. They said that Maduro was probably just playing some games. But the Biden White House decided, let's give it a shot. Well, over the past 6 months, things went very good for the Maduro regime. He vacuumed up an extra $750 million from oil cash. But he did not hold up his end of the bargain. He banned that Ms. Machado from running, and he also arrested some other opposition figures. The only thing that he really gave the Biden White House was a very modest agreement to hold some elections, and those are scheduled for July. It's just that he's not going to face any real opposition, and that is leaving Biden's critics to say, we told you so. Well, Biden's team has reluctantly began to admit that their attempt to woo Mr. Maduro has failed, and they decided this week to make some changes, kind of. And that quick refresh takes us to the news. The White House announced yesterday that they are going to reimpose some sanctions on Venezuela's oil industry. Well, kind of. Mr. Biden's team announced that they are going to authorize oil companies to get waivers from these new sanctions such that they can continue to work with Venezuela and their state oil company. Critics note that this waiver system, it is big enough to drive an oil tanker through, to which Biden's team says, yeah, that's the point. As the Wall Street Journal is telling us this morning, the White House is worried that if they just seal up this loophole and they squeeze Venezuela and their oil industry, it's going to do two things. First, it'll likely bump up gas and diesel prices over the summer and into the fall. And that, of course, is when Mr. Biden needs voters like you to be very happy economically as you go to the polls. Second, if there were a full snapback of sanctions, that could anger Mr. Maduro such that he pushes out the 10 million or so Venezuelans that are already saying that they want to leave if he wins what would be a rigged election. And obviously, if that happens, Mr. Biden is in big trouble because American voters already believe that the White House has failed on our southern border. And so having 10 million more illegals, give or take, would only prove the point. And it would ultimately push Biden out of the Oval Office. And that is why, as the Wall Street Journal and others are sharing with us, Mr. Maduro is now in the driver's seat. He knows that Biden needs him more than he needs Mr. Biden. And with those facts and data, let me now pivot to my analysis and opinion. So let me reframe for us what's happening big picture. First, we know that Mr. Biden and his party are trying to bankrupt the oil and gas industry because of climate change. And yet, or but, he and his team know that we still need oil and gas, at least for a little while. So what they're trying to do is this. They're cracking down on U.S. oil exploration and production, but in doing that, it creates a reliance on foreign countries and their oil and gas reserves and production. And that reliance, as ever, gives them leverage. And in this case, it includes countries like communist Venezuela. Now, on top of that, Venezuela has another form of leverage. They've got upwards of 10 million Venezuelans who want to leave, and Maduro is now using those people as weapons. In other words, Maduro is saying to Biden this morning, look, I can make or break your re-election campaign either with my oil or my people. So cut me a deal on the sanctions. Give me some oil waivers that I could drive a tanker through, and I'll see what I can do to prevent my people from flooding your border over the summer. So that's why Biden and his team are doing what they're doing this morning. They're slapping on sanctions, but with a loophole big enough to drive an oil tanker through. And I'll tell you, folks, it doesn't have to be this way. We don't have to let a Marxist dictator control our country or our energy policies or our borders. Mr. Biden could lock down our border via, well, executive orders, or he could work with the House to embrace an immigration bill called H.R. 2, which we'll reference again in a bit. He could also encourage more domestic oil and gas exploration and production. He could also work with the industry to build some new refineries to take advantage of our own production. But all those options, as great as they might be, are just not going to happen. That is because Mr. Biden and his party have very different priorities. And that is why, this morning, we have a communist dictator in Venezuela who is in the driver's seat. And golly, it just underlines what I often say. Good leadership really does matter. And with that, let us take our first break of the morning. For subscribers listening at rightreport.substack.com, thank you. Meanwhile, for my other loyal listeners, I offer you an equal thanks. Today, the incredible people at American Giant are the lead sponsors. Ah, so great. We've also got Ghostbed and American Hartford Gold joining them, all supporting today's episode. And I am incredibly honored to endorse all of them. We'll be right back. For the past 5 months, I've been telling you about American Giant, and I am so proud to tell you about them, and most especially, wear their clothes, because they are made right here in America. I've got two of their hoodies, I've got t-shirts, socks, some joggers, and shorts, and every time I wear American Giant, I know that I'm wearing something very special. I feel the quality, the durability, and the pride that goes into each and every piece of clothing that they offer, and I promise you, folks, you are going to feel it too. And you are going to know that these products will last you for years. So go to American-Giant.com. And when you do, you are going to find a closet staple, I promise, for every part of your spring days. Plus, when you go to American-Giant.com, you are going to get 20% off your first order. Just use that promo code RIGHT at checkout. Again, go to American-Giant.com. Use that promo code RIGHT, of course, that's W-R-I-G-H-T, and get yourself that 20% off. And let's get this country going again, shall we? Let's make America giant. It's a good morning, but we need to talk about tonight. And that is because, as ever, you need a good night's sleep tonight, and you're going to get that with Ghost Bed. Yes, it's the company that I think makes the finest mattresses in all of America. And you all know that's true because I own one. I had the Lux model. But they've got those other great options too, like the classic, the massage bed, yes please, and also one for your RV. But no matter what model you choose from, you gotta get one of these things. The mattresses are built with high quality materials and fine craftsmanship, and you are gonna feel both when that thing is delivered right to your doorstep. As always, they have a 101-day trial period with free returns. So folks, get yourselves a Ghost Bed and get 50% off when you do. Go to ghostbed.com/right, that's W-R-I-G-H-T, and get 50% off your Ghost Bed purchase. Again, that's ghostbed.com/right, and get ready, because once that bed arrives, you are going to be off to a great night's sleep. I guarantee it. In the coming weeks, you are likely to hear even more headlines about leaders in both the U.S. and Europe starting to seize Russian assets. They're going to do it to pay for the war in Ukraine. We spoke of this back in early January with the very clear effects on the U.S. dollar and our pocketbooks. So if you are looking for ways to diversify your investments, and we should, consider physical gold and silver, and consider American Hartford Gold as you do. They are the precious metal dealer that I use and trust. When you give them a call, they will explain how to protect your savings and retirement accounts by purchasing physical gold and silver. And feel comfortable using American Hartford Gold, as they have an A-plus ranking from the Better Business Bureau. So either give them a call at 866-353-2694. Again, that is 866-353-2694. Or just text them. Just text WRIGHT, that's W-R-I-G-H-T, WRIGHT to 65532. Man, that is easy. Again, that's WRIGHT 265532. And when you do, folks, they will give you up to $5,000 of free silver on your first order, all depending on your total purchase. So again, give them a call at 866-353-2694 or text my last name, WRIGHT, to 65532. And folks, buy that physical gold and silver with American Hartford Gold. Welcome back to The Right Report. Let's continue with our briefs this morning with more domestic and international news. Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson yesterday announced that he will move forward with a $61 billion aid bill for Ukraine. It comes after months of intense lobbying by Democrats, Senate Republicans, European diplomats, and companies like Raytheon. His decision to do this prompted all kinds of emotions yesterday in D.C. A lot of anger, a lot of celebration, too. Supporters at the White House and within the Democrat Party were absolutely thrilled. Some Republicans joined them as well, but not many. And that's because Mr. Johnson previously said to his fellow conservatives and Republicans that he would not move forward with any aid to Ukraine until and unless the U.S. southern border was sealed up. As he said back in December, the border issue was, quote, the hill for Republicans to die on, end quote. He said not one penny for Ukraine or any other countries before the Biden administration addressed the illegal alien crisis. But clearly, Mr. Johnson changed his mind. The Ukraine aid bill will go forward with a vote, probably on Saturday, along with some aid to Israel, Taiwan, and others. The border, however, will remain open in the meantime. Now, Mr. Johnson's change of heart is causing, as I mentioned, a lot of anger amongst his Republican caucus on the Hill this morning. In fact, there is a possibility that he's going to get tossed out of his role, just as his predecessor did, Mr. Kevin McCarthy, last fall. And if that were to happen, the reasons for it would be fourfold. First, a lot of these guys and gals on Capitol Hill, especially in the House, they feel very betrayed, because he promised to do one thing while running for the speakership, but he just did the other. The opposite, actually. Second, his Republican critics argue that the southern border is a far greater priority than other foreign nations, and yet nothing has been done about it. So they argue that he could and should have used leverage to push for an existing piece of House legislation about immigration. It's called H.R. 2. And yet he didn't. Third, there are real concerns this morning that the United States just cannot fiscally afford this bill or much of any more spending. They point out the fact that America is running a national debt of about $35 trillion with record interest payments on that debt. Plus, we are running record annual deficits, too. And without fiscal discipline, nonpartisan budget analysts say that this country is heading towards insolvency in give or take 15 years' time. Fourth and finally, a lot of his critics say that, man, there is some fresh analysis out there, certainly coming from America's military, also Ukrainian military, that this aid is not going to actually change the outcome of the war, despite the suggestions or pleas to the contrary. So, with those quick facts and data, let me pivot now to my analysis and opinion, and we're going to talk about it and focus on two things. First, the politics of this, and then second, the effectiveness of this war aid bill. So let's talk about the politics. About a week ago, the Gallup organization came out with their latest polling on whether Americans support more aid to Ukraine, less, or about the same. Well, here's the result. About 60% of Republicans said that we're given too much. About 40% of independents felt the same. Democrats, however, were the only group that said that we need to give more. And that's what makes House Speaker Mike Johnson's decision to, well, it's just so remarkable. He directly opposed what the vast majority of his base wants, and most independents do. And that is a pretty shocking thing for any leader to do, to shun his own base of support just 7 months before a major federal election. Well, let's put the politics aside, and let's ask this. Will the $61 billion in war aid make a difference in terms of the ultimate outcome of this war? Well, the honest answer is, I don't know. Nobody really knows. But I would remind us of a few things this morning. First, as I briefed you on previously, about 90% of Europeans do not think that Ukraine can win this war. I shared that back with you on February 28th. But the bottom line from that brief, to just refresh our memories on that, is that the facts and the data show that Ukraine lacks the manpower, the war materiel, and the good leadership to create success. Second, and since that February brief, we have had very clear assessments from both the Ukrainian and U.S. military that things are going from bad to worse for Ukraine, and this war bill is not going to fix it. For example, we know that Russia has reconstituted their military, adding about 15% to its overall size as compared to the beginning of the war. And the opposite is true for Ukraine. In fact, and speaking of, Moscow now outnumbers Kiev's fighters upwards about 10 to 1 on the battlefield. And this war bill cannot address that. Now, most critically, Ukraine's military leaders, like General Oleksandr Pavlyuk, have said that no matter how much war aid that they get from either America or Europe, they just lack men. They need upwards of 500,000 soldiers to keep up the fight. In other words, folks, the war is lost without hundreds of thousands of new troops. And Ukraine just doesn't have the men, even with a recent bill that was passed by the parliament in Ukraine to conscript more men, which means that the soldiers have to come from somewhere. And the only place that Ukraine can get those, that's from NATO, like American men and women in uniform. So those are the continuing facts and data, plus those pieces of fresh assessment from the Pentagon and Ukraine's leadership. And as ever, it leads me to believe that this $61 billion is being wasted. Not only is it adding to our $35 trillion in national debt, it is going to extend a war that cannot be won unless Russia either makes some grave miscalculations, which they might, or second, NATO commits your sons and daughters for this war, which they may. And that is because, as you folks might remember, the leaders of France, Poland, and the Baltics have been recently floating this idea of bringing in NATO troops. So, my friends, that is the latest. And as ever, I don't know how this war is going to ultimately turn out because, gosh, I'm not a fan of Putin. I don't want him to win. But it is very clear that, based on what we know today, this war is lost. And the winds are at the back of Vladimir Putin, as much as I don't like that. And I tell you, it's important that we acknowledge reality, even if we really don't want to. Regardless, I'll keep you posted, folks. Finally, this morning, we've got a different kind of war to talk about. It is an economic war. The White House has launched a series of trade fights against China and Russia over the past week, with likely follow-on effects that could hit your pocketbook and especially America's fight with inflation. Let's begin with the White House's efforts against China. Mr. Biden announced yesterday a pretty dramatic increase in tariffs on both Chinese steel and aluminum. The tariffs are set to rise from 7.5% to 25% over the next few days. The White House argues that that has to be done because China is dumping their cheap products all around the world, knowing that it'll either harm or bankrupt other steel and aluminum companies, including those in the U.S. To the point, the White House would say this, China's steel is about 40% cheaper than U.S. steel, all because Beijing subsidizes that industry. For what it's worth, China said yesterday that Biden has got this all wrong. They deny his allegation of dumping or cheating. They say that the White House is making this decision not because of economics, but because of some good old-fashioned politics. Yes, Biden announced the new tariffs at a steel plant in Pennsylvania, which was full of union voters that he will obviously need this coming fall. Next, the Biden White House also announced yesterday that they are snapping back some tariffs on Chinese solar panels. Mr. Biden had relaxed those tariffs a couple of years ago in order to speed up what he calls the green energy revolution. But as listeners might recall, that move was very controversial, all because those solar panels and their components are largely made from labor from concentration camps. Now, after 2 years of consumers buying those slave products, the White House says, all right, it's time to bring the tariffs back. Although I should tell you, it is unclear if that is going to apply to the overall panels or the components inside. And that's important because, as listeners might recall from my brief back on August 14th, the vast majority of the components inside of the panels, from the polysilicon to the ingots, the wafers, and the cells, all of that, the components are still going to largely come from China. And that's because the communists produce upwards of 95% of the world's supply of a lot of those components, especially those ingots. So that is the new trade war that the White House is launching against the Chinese. Well, we've also got another economic fight to talk about. This is regarding the Russians. On Friday of last week, the U.S. and the United Kingdom moved to restrict or otherwise ban the sale of Russian nickel, aluminum, and copper. The prices for those metals are mostly set at the London Metal Exchange or the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. So these moves by D.C. and London late last week will affect prices globally and maybe push up inflation. And worse yet, the move isn't likely to affect Moscow's ability to sell their metals. That's because most of that stuff is going to be purchased by China or other allies. Now, to be fair, the White House argues that by making it ultimately more difficult for Moscow to sell their goods on the international marketplace, even if it eventually lands in China or otherwise, the Russians are going to have to offer buyers a bit of a discount because whoever they are, wherever they are, they're going to have to go through some hassle to get this stuff. And that discount that the Russians have to give a buyer is the goal. The White House hopes that Russia is going to have to give so much of a discount that they lose a big chunk of the $15 billion that they earn each year from exporting those metals. But as most economists pointed out yesterday, by squeezing this global supply of the metals and tinkering with the prices, we're probably going to see a trickle-down effect to your pocketbook. That is because aluminum prices are already at a record high, so too are prices for copper. And so when DC and London are screwing around, that is going to impact you eventually because it's going to affect the price that you pay for things like cars or plane tickets and energy systems of all kinds, plus consumer products too. Well, the White House, to be fair, says, don't worry, it won't. And that's about it they had to say. So we shall see. And with those facts and data, let me now give you my parting analysis and opinion this morning. So I've got three final thoughts for you. First, America is now awash with solar panels that were made by people who are locked up in concentration camps. Mr. Biden chose to allow that for 2 years. Now, I don't know if that will be fully appreciated by history. I hope so. All right, we should have to wrestle with the fact that as we drive down a road or we see a solar panel on a home, we need to acknowledge that those came from concentration camp labor. That's really important, I think, to remember. Those people in the concentration camps are important to remember. Second, this tariff war, especially on the Russians, leaves me pretty skeptical. So earlier this week, the IMF announced that the Russian economy is going to grow faster this year than all other developed economies, faster than us, the U.S. So whatever Biden or Western powers are doing on the sanctions front, it does not appear to be working. Third, over the past 6 months or so, Mr. Donald Trump has been calling for an increasing number of tariffs on Chinese goods, anywhere from another 10 to 60%. Again, using the same logic as Mr. Biden, wanting to crimp down on the cheating Chinese. Now, put aside whether that is wise or not to do, because reasonable people can disagree. Instead, what I'd like to do, as I leave you today, is think about the media's reaction to what both of those men are saying, because they're saying more or less the same thing. And yet, Trump, on one hand, is being blasted for it. There is just oodles of articles out there and TV interviews of economists saying that, gosh, Trump is going to absolutely destroy our economy. He is taxing the working poor in this country. And all right, fine, fair enough, you can make that argument. But as I was conducting research yesterday, those same media outlets and same economists who were, again, blasting Trump, they had very little to say about Biden embracing these same kinds of tariffs or sanctions on both the Chinese and the Russians. And that's interesting, isn't it? It just goes to show that these two men might propose the exact same thing, whether it be about the economy or the border, but the media treats Mr. Biden with just kid gloves, or they even rave about his ideas. But Trump gets blasted as reckless or destructive for saying the same thing. All right, it's not exactly surprising anymore, but it sure gets annoying. But now, hey, let's celebrate that both candidates this morning are moving towards a tougher line on China. Although, I'm not so sure how sincere those positions might be, especially for the big guy. But we shall see. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we conclude your morning brief. As always, I will see you tomorrow, God willing. Until then, I leave you with a creed of every good spy and every wise American. They're the words from the Gospel of John, chapter 8, verse 32. And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Good day.